What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the live NBA outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and regular guest on the show, Jorge Cantu. How are we doing, guys?
I'm doing fantastic. Normally, it's the guest first, but I'm doing great. Nick, Jorge, always a pleasure. Normally, Jorge has a tendency to make this podcast a little bit spicy when he hops on, so we're hoping that continues.
Right. I don't want to fight every time I come here, but things just tend to get spicy when I'm on. But once again, thankful for the opportunity to be back, and let's ready to talk some basketball on a night with no NBA games.
Which feels really strange to have NBA games tonight. And obviously there's college basketball. What we're going to be doing tonight is NBA awards. And just a quick reminder, check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. But guys, let's get started with Rookie of the Year. You know, first-year players, first award on the show. Don't think there's going to be a ton of discussion here, but Jorge, who you got?
I think it's pretty easy. Luka.
It would have been really funny if he said really easy, Trae Young.
Really easy, DeAndre Ayton.
it's Luka Doncic for me as well. But honestly, it's been an incredible post-All-Star break for Trae Young, because – if you were asking me back in probably early January who the Rookie of the Year would be, I would tell you Luka Doncic, and everybody else would be miles away. And I don't think Trae Young is miles away. I think he's probably, you know, he deserves to be in the conversation. He just hasn't done it for as long. We've mentioned it before in the NBA outlet, that really rough shooting stretch to start the year kind of held him back. But the playmaking has been there throughout the entire season, and obviously – down the stretch, they've had some nice wins over Milwaukee, over Philly. The Atlanta Hawks have been a very good, bad team. So shout out to Trae Young, but Luka Doncic has done enough, way more than I expected. You know, 8 triple-doubles, I think, on the year. And he looks to be the future in Dallas, and I can't wait to see him next to Porzingis in the future.
Yeah, no, you mentioned it. You know, it's Luka, obviously. But Trae, if he doesn't have a bad October and November, I think this is races down to the wire, and Trae might even have won it. But the fact is, he started so slow. And I think, you know, recency bias has some people going with Trae Young. But the fact is, at the deadline, Dallas kind of went into tank mode. So that kind of hurt Luka a little bit. But he showcased enough that he's going to be a really good player in this league for a long time. So I think we all agree to start the show on Luka being Rookie of the Year. All right. Coach of the Year, who are you rolling with?
I actually participated in the one round table for OTG. And yes, I picked Mike Budenholzer. And I think this one is, you know, one could say Mike Malone, who is the Nuggets head coach, but I think it's, for me, it's pretty clear. Just a huge turnaround that Budenholzer, especially system-wise. I remember reading an article a couple of months ago where Budenholzer literally painted a couple of X's all around the three-point line. And this is like, Giannis, you're going at the top of the key. Everyone else, you're going in the corners and on the wing. And you let Giannis operate, and then he's gotten so much out of the bench. And I just really like what Bud has done. And I, you know, even though he got a little bit criticized for just leaving Atlanta just because, you know what, I don't want to be here in the rebuild. Well, here's what he can do with this good of a team. And I think it's pretty clear he's maximized the potential this team has, and maybe not at his fullest, but at least, you know, very, very high ceiling he's taken this team.
Yeah, it's Mike Budenholzer for me as well. I think Milwaukee, they were my dark horse team going into the year. I expected them to be really good. I just didn't think they were going to buy into Mike's system so quickly. And obviously they have Antetokounmpo's. We've seen what he can do with so many floor spaces around him. Eric Bledsoe with a career year. The Bucks won 60 games. They dominated the Eastern Conference for almost the entire season. And, you know, Mike Budenholzer deserves all the credit for that. I would love to have given it to Nate McMillan. I probably would have went with Nate McMillan if March wasn't so bad. I think if the Pacers had managed to get through March with, you know, a 500 record, and maybe they held on to the three seed, they held on to the fourth seed, I may have gave it to Nate McMillan. But the fact that March and this April has been so rough for the Pacers, they kind of fallen back down to earth. Mike Budenholzer, to me, would be the clear cut, with probably Mike Malone second.
Yeah, Coach Bud, what he did, obviously, we know the Bucks were somewhat of a talented team last year in the 8th seed. Now they go in to have the best record in the NBA. He's turned Giannis into an MVP candidate, and he's got the most out of a lot of guys. Like, Brook Lopez was sitting in free agency. They picked him up. He's having an excellent season, just using the players in the right position, and a lot of credit goes to him. And, Jorge, you wrote a great piece early in the year that he wasn't only going to have an impact offensively, but defensively, he's taking them to another level as well. So, I think there's really no way not to go with Coach Bud because they have the best record, and they went from an 8 seed to a 1 seed, and they look dominant. They're having a historic season. I think a lot of people forget that just because so many great things are going on in the NBA, but they're blowing teams out on a regular basis, double-digit wins across the board. So very impressive work, and it might not be the last time we talk about a Bucks personnel or player at this point. Right.
But I'm pretty sure the Bucks are both top 5 in offensive and defensive ratings, so that's just a testament to how dominant they have been on both ends. And yeah, I mean, as much as people want to throw other names into the conversation, this one I think is pretty clear for most of us.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mike Malone at second. Obviously, the one thing I guess going against him is they've kind of tailed off a touch towards the end of the season. You know, you could still make an argument, but overall, and Corey mentioned, you know, Nate McMillan, Kenny Atkinson, Doc Rivers. There's just tons and tons of coaches who deserve a lot of credit for the jobs they've done this season. Now, moving on to another personnel, not a player, executive of the year.
Well, I got John Horst. I'm pretty sure is the name of the guy in charge of the Bucks. So, I mean, same thing. He made sure he brought Brook Lopez with a mid-level exception. He signed Eric Bledsoe. He re-signed him just a couple of about a month ago. So he's basically all in with this team. He knows that he has to stick with what has worked, and I'm pretty sure that he's made as good of a pitch and Milwaukee is as good of a situation as it possibly can get for Chris Middleton moving forward. And he deserves a lot of credit as the whole Milwaukee organization overall. So I'll take John Horst.
Yeah, I'm going with Elton Brand from Philly. I think, when you look at the moves, I think Philly has acquired the most high-level talent this year probably. Getting the Jimmy Butler deal on, obviously Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent, getting Tobias Harris, having these win now pieces in motion, getting those smaller moves like James Ennis, trying to bolster that, and getting even Greg Monroe as soon as two weeks ago, they've made those kind of moves. Elton Brand in his first year as the GM for the Sixers, kind of just saying that we're tired of being, you know, there's no more trust the process, that we are, you know, we're here, we're trying to win now. So I've loved the aggression and the no fear, because the fact of the matter is he made all these moves and there's a possibility they lose Tobias Harris and they lose Jimmy Butler for nothing. So the fact that he was able to take that risk and make those calculated risks, still bringing in some talent to try and give Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons the best opportunity to win a championship now, for me, it's Elton Brand.
See, that's exactly why I'm not picking Elton Brand, is because the risk of the moves. Jimmy Butler leaves, Tobias Harris leaves. You just lost a whole bunch of draft picks and stock and, you know, these players. And now all of a sudden you're stuck with just Embiid and Simmons. So I think John Horst gets it because we just said he got the coach of the year. He picked him up. He also surrounded Giannis and the rest of that team with players that are going to get them to the highest level. So I like what they did in Milwaukee. I just think everything in Milwaukee being such a great team. And I think Philly's had stretches this year where have they really gelled perfectly? Are we really sure? And the bench is still a question, and their ability to defend point guards is a concern. So I'm going with John Horst here. I think Elton Brand's done an excellent job, but I just think there's a lot of risk with the moves he's made.
Dark Horse, who is the Clippers GM? Because that man, he deserves a ton of credit.
Jerry West, right?
He's actually the GM.
He's like an executive or something, right?
Correct, yep.
Well, whoever did
Michael Winger.
Okay, no. I'm never heard of him. I'll be honest, yeah, no idea. But that guy or whoever made the moves this year, he's a genius. I mean, dating back to the Chris Paul trade, you could see that guy had a vision. And, well, a lot of people, including myself, criticized him for moving to Tobias before the trade deadline. It's worked out. I mean, I don't know if it was by design or by accident, but it has worked perfectly for them. You know, they didn't really give up that much, or it was a low risk move. They still make the playoffs. They still hold on to most of their young assets. And I mean, I think they just straight out won every move that they have made over this last year. So big props to the Clippers GM too.
Yeah, and I think we kind of talked about this on the Brooklyn Buzz yesterday. It's almost a word where it's like your body of work. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he won next year if they land KD or Kawhi or something along those lines, because, hey, you know, all the moves I made the previous season led to this. Now all of a sudden we're a championship team and what seems like 1 year, but it's a big body of work. And also yeah. another guy in the conversation possibly next year would be a guy like Sean Marks.
Yes, definitely.
Talking about possible Nets winning, let's go to the most improved player. Who you guys got?
I think it's hard not to go Pascal Siakam just because of how, like, he literally – he's now a legitimate third option in a championship contender team. Like, I know it's only a single season, but I think that's kind of like what the most improved player award is kind of all about. You know, who took the major step. And I think it's clearly Pascal. You can see it both on the stats. He's been really good defensively, offensively. He's been efficient on the however amount of touches he's got. So, I mean, it's close. I could definitely see a case for D'Angelo. Earlier in the season, I was campaigning for Justice Winslow, but you know how things go. So for now, I think it's pretty Pascal is one of the – should be the leader in most polls.
This is a tough one because I really haven't like fully bought in on either like on Pascal Siakam or D'Angelo Russell. Like I feel like internally torn between the two because I think D'Lo's case is the fact that with the expectations of maybe being a borderline playoff team, he was able to be an all-star this year. He kind of carried the weight of the net to certain points in time when Spencer Dinwiddie was down, when Caris LeVert was down. Obviously, he led that huge comeback win against the Sacramento Kings, and he's been tremendous most of the year. Then you look on the other side, Siakam's been the guy. You know, he's played in 79 games this year, started 78 of them, so he's been basically he's been indestructible. He's played the most games between him, Lowry, and Kawhi, who have missed time between injured – well, not Kawhi because of injury, but Kawhi just because of resting, load management, and then Lowry resting. He's been the consistent guy there. As you mentioned, Jorge, the third option, his numbers have taken a major jump. Obviously, he got a bigger role, so that can also be a contributed to those erasing numbers. He has a 9.2 win share this year, a 3.5 value over replacement. For me, it's probably going to be Pascal Siakam. The Raptors do have championship aspirations. They are still probably, for me, a 1A or a 1B, a 1A or 1B to the Bucks being the first team. So for me, I think it's going to be Siakam.
Thanks, guys. No. I'm going with D'Angelo Russell here for multiple reasons, and not just because I'm a Nets fan, but if you look at what he actually has to do, and that's nothing against Pascal Siakam. He's not the best player in his team. Mm-hmm. You might make the argument he's the second best player, but he's probably the third best player. He's playing with a lot of great players, not only in the starters and the stars in that team, but overall in depth, even the role players. You have guys like Danny Green, Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol in that squad. D'Angelo Russell is the best player in the Nets, and he's running the show. That's like saying, hey, the wide receiver is going to win MVP over a quarterback, because D'Angelo, you saw this yesterday, Corey, in the first quarter, he's not knocking down a shot. He's setting up his team to be better. I don't know if you can say the same about Pascal Siakam. Obviously, the bigger case for him is he's a two-way player. He's better defensively, you know, offensively, defensively, he's going to have his impact. But D'Angelo's going to make his teammates better offensively. Joe Harris probably doesn't have the season he's having without D'Angelo Russell as his point guard. And I think his ability to take over a game, yes, Siakam's had really big games, but is he making that comeback that the Nets had against the Kings? Is he putting up 27 in the fourth quarter to come back down 25 and scoring 40-plus in a game? I don't think he's doing that. Not on that Nets squad. If we were to swap these players and say, hey, you know, let's put Pascal Siakam on the Nets and D'Angelo Russell on the Raptors, I don't think the Nets are making the playoffs. And, you know, people are going to be like, well, D'Angelo was a number two pick. Last year, he was injured majority of the season. And a lot of people were like, is he even an NBA starter? Is he just going to be some type of bench player like a J.R. Smith that just gets hot? This year, he's really transformed his game and being a good basketball player. And he got the All-Star berth, and he's been one of the best point guards probably in the league over since 2019 started. since 2019, 23 points a game, over 7 assists a game, almost 8 assists, 44% from the field, 37% from 3, and only 3 turnovers. So he's really running the show and taking the Nets team to a whole nother level. So that's my argument for D'Angelo. Obviously, the narrative is against him. Siakam's been probably better to start the season. D'Angelo picked it up as soon as Karis went down and then Spencer went down. But I think D'Angelo is really taking his game to a different type of level. And we talked about this before. It's not just jumping and becoming a really good starter. He jumped from being a borderline starter to being an all-star player and a franchise cornerstone.
That's a great point. I mean,
that logic.
I mean, the impact, I think when it comes to the impact, I think D'Lo is for sure more impactful than Pascal Siakam for the fact that, like you mentioned, and I mean, I don't necessarily like the flipping them to who would be more impactful, like if you had D'Lo on the Raptors compared to Siakam. But I think if you take away Siakam from the Raptors, they're not as far off as if you take D'Angelo away from the Nets are significantly worse. I think that's how I would take the argument. You know, I have no qualms with – I've never used that word. I have no qualms with D'Angelo Russell winning most improved. I just think maybe for me it's because Siakam's, like you mentioned, like a little bit more of a two-way guy, and the fact that he did it for the duration of the season, that he sticks out more. But the fact of the matter is D'Lo still elevated this Nets team to their first playoff appearance in 5 years.
I ask you guys this. Who do you think is going to have a better career? This isn't part of the award discussion. Easy. I'm just curious.
It's D'Angelo Russell easily.
I think it's D'Angelo just because he has so much more room for growth, whereas I think we've seen most, you know, it's tough to say this with players so young, but I think we've seen a lot of what Pascal can do. Maybe he'll be more consistent down the road, but D'Angelo, his ceiling is considerably higher than Pascal, so I got to go with D'Angelo.
And I will say another thing, just throwing the argument, I would almost guarantee D'Angelo accounts for more points a game, not with just scoring, but also his assists and setting up his teammates. And I'll bring up the point again that the Raptors overall squad is still better than the Nets squad. And that's no offense to them. They're a young team that's still developing. You have a lot of veterans on there that are going to make your life easier. And there's not pressure on Siakam. No one came into the season is like, oh, it's a big year for Pascal Siakam. He doesn't have a breakout season. The Raptors are going to cut him or he's not going to get his contract. This is a contract year for D'Angelo. The narrative has been out, all this nonsense with the Nick Young thing still being brought up, Pacers fans yesterday chirping at him. So overall, I mean, I know D'Angelo is not going to win, but I think he deserves to win. And I could go on for the rest of the show, but we're going to move on from here. Defensive player of the year, who you guys rolling with?
This one's tough, but I'll take Rudy Gobert. Similar to the way Steph Curry is a magnet when he's on offense, I think Rudy Gobert is like the opposite on defense. Like when he's close to the rim, of course, I don't watch that many Jazz games, but those few moments, like it's really crazy how impactful Rudy Gobert is on the defensive end. Of course, he's a menace for blocks. He's so long, relatively mobile for how tall he is. And he has a really high IQ, which is a really underrated part from defense. Well, not lately, but I think he deserves a good chance as a repeater for DPOY.
Nick, for this one, I want you to give your pick before me.
So this is the one I told Corey before we started the show. This is the one I wasn't really sure with. You know, there's different ways to go here. I think Gobert's the safest pick, and he'll probably most likely win. And I agree with all the points that Jorge brought up. The fact is, when he's in the paint, teams are avoiding him. Even the rest of the players on his team aren't elite defensively, but the fact he's out there, he just kind of upgrades everybody because they can just funnel them inside, and Gobert's going to probably block it or contest the shot. Then you look at a guy like Paul George, who's been excellent. He's kind of tailed off a little bit, and I think one thing against Paul George would be the fact that he plays with a lot of other great defensive players. Steven Adams is known more so for his defense than his offense. Terrence Ferguson's not out there because he's a great offensive player. Same thing could probably be said about Jeremy Grant. So I think that fact kind of hurts Paul George. The dark horse that I have in this conversation that I really am considering is Antetokounmpo. Like, it'd be crazy if he won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, but I'm telling you, watching the Bucks on Monday against the Nets and then watching the Bucks Saturday against the Nets, the impact he has, his length is ridiculous. Like, he's not only blocking shots inside, but he's clogging passing lanes. I think I'm going to probably roll with Gobert because of one of the picks I'm going to make later on. But I think there's a real chance that Giannis was going to be in the conversation and could win it.
Yeah. So I have.
I know where you're going. I know. Where
No. You ain't got a clue. So my top three choices for Defensive Player of the Year, not in this order, Miles Turner, Rudy Gobert, and Paul George. These are the three guys that I've been looking at for Defensive Player of the Year. Paul George has probably been the best perimeter defender in the league currently. Kawhi is obviously there. The player votings came out today. I don't know if you guys saw, and Kawhi Leonard was voted by like 120 players as the best defender.
What a surprise.
in the league. So looking at just like some numbers, when it comes to like defensive rating, Paul George has like a 105 defensive rating. Miles Turner has a 101. Rudy Gobert has a 100. Defensive win shares. Paul George has only 4.8. Miles Turner has 4.9. And then Rudy Gobert has a wicked 5.7. Defensive plus minus Gobert is 5.1. Miles Turner is only 4.7, excuse me. As much as I wanted to give it to somebody else, when you look at the numbers, the advanced stats, the per 100 possessions, Miles Turner may have an edge in overall block shots per game and blocks. Paul George may have the edge in steals per game. But when you're looking at the cumulative body of work, it is Rudy Gobert for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, I see no issue with that at all. Obviously, like we talked about, Gobert also puts fear in the offensive player. Like, they don't want to go inside because he's going to reject their shot. And Miles Turner, I think he's definitely in the conversation. You know, if Oladipo doesn't get hurt and they maintain their record and they're still elite defensively, I know they've been really good defensively, but I think he has a better chance at it. And like I said, I think Paul George, you know, the fact he plays with such teammates and he also has been a little bit more inconsistent towards the end of the season, I would go with Gobert. So all in agreement for Rudy?
Yeah.
No, we've been agreeing way too much. Jorge, what are you doing here? I'm just kidding.
Till we get to the next couple of awards and I'll have some for you.
So we already covered Rookie of the Year, Defense Player of the Year, Most Improved, Executive Coach of the Year, and now we got six man.
Booming down on some men like Lou Will. Six men like Lou Will. Hey, is there even another choice? Like Dwayne Wade, hell? Nah. it's got to be Lou Will. Like, who's scoring 20 points per game off the bench in only 26.6 minutes per game? Like, that's crazy. That award eventually should be renamed the Lou Williams Award in the future. Like, this will be what, his third?
Second or third?
This will be his third.
He'll be tying third. Jamal Crawford, I think, for the most six-man of the years if he wins this year.
Yeah, and I mean, what he's done for the Clippers. And the craziest thing is maybe Montrezl Harrell, who's actually teammates with Lou Williams, is like the second closest thing to a sixth man of the year around the league. I know there's an argument. There was an argument early for Derrick Rose, and then you can say a bunch of things for Domantas Sabonis.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah, well, I'm waiting. It's okay. Just
I'm a Domantas Sabonis guy. Don't worry. But, I mean, it's got to be Lou Will. He's probably the second best player on the Clippers behind Danilo Gallinari, and one of the biggest reasons why they're in the playoffs. So give it to the sixth man, Lou Will.
Again, if the Pacers don't have a terrible March, and they maintain their seeding in Sabonis, because Sabonis really hasn't dipped in play at all. He had 30 double-doubles this year off the bench. His stats took a major jump across the board in points per game and rebounding. He's been incredible for the Pacers, especially with the second unit. The Pacers don't have a lot of offense, believe it or not, guys. Without Oladipo, not a lot of guys can score on that team. Sabonis was a necessity for bench scoring. But like Jorge mentioned, it's Lou Williams, and it's really not close. Lou Williams has kind of been a league of his own. The amount of points he's able to put up in 26 minutes per game, right? I think that's what Jorge said. He's already set the benchmark for points from a six-man. I know he passed Dell Curry this year. I know he had several game winners this year, one of them being against the Brooklyn Nets. Sorry, Nick, for that. Got memory lane.
That one was crazy too. Like, I don't know if you guys recall, it wasn't even shot. It was like a heave.
Yeah. And he also had a triple double this year. So like Lou Williams has been incredible. Obviously the entire Clippers season, they're one of the teams this year. You know, we mentioned they got rid of their best player at the deadline and they didn't miss a beat. They actually moved up in the Western Conference standings after trading away their best player. So I think definitely shout out to the Clippers and Lou Williams, who is probably sixth man of the year.
Yeah, you guys brought up a great point. Obviously, Lou Will is going to be my pick. Montrezl Harrell, the guy on his team, is in the conversation as well. You guys mentioned Sabonis. I think Dinwiddie's probably in it if he never got hurt, because his numbers have kind of tailed off since the injury. So I think Lou Will, we're all in agreement here. Not really much to discuss. Now, on to the final award, MVP.
Is this going to be a discussion? Because it's got to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. Just so dominant on both ends of the floor. Of course, like, well, some people use like the three ball as an argument against him, but I think it's crazy how he can do as much considering he's barely a 25% three-point shooter. I'm pretty sure he's shooting about 2.5 threes per game or something like that, only 25% clip. But when you can, you know, all things aside, it's a super tough race between Harden and Giannis, but he, you know, he had the narrative. He's the best player on the best team with the best record. He, of course, dominates on both ends of the floor. And the other day, I read a very interesting argument, which is he barely plays 32.8 minutes per game. And that just goes on to show how dominant he can be in a relatively short amount of time. This really, once again, I'm bringing up Steph Curry because, you know, the level of dominance that he had in his back-to-back MVP seasons. I think it's similar when the Bucks just blow out teams by double digits early and he can just take a full breather for the fourth quarter. And, you know, I think it's give or take an argument or two. I wouldn't be mad if somebody said the Harden, but for me, it's Giannis.
Yeah, you know, I've been talking about this MVP race a lot over the last couple of weeks. It's a race where I refuse to let anyone discredit the other person, right? Both of these guys, what they've done individually is ridiculous. James Harden having to carry that Houston Rockets team from, at one point in time, 14th in the Western Conference. At some point, this podcast with me and Nick, we did not believe the Rockets were going to be able to come all the way back and get home court advantage. They went from 14th to the 3 seed, and they had a real chance for the 2 seed even. I think they had a tiebreaker over the Nuggets. I think technically they could even get the 2 seed.
Yeah, I still think they're in the contention for the 2 seed.
Right, which is absurd.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right,
that's
which is
crazy.
Absurd. And that's all credit to James Harden. You know, the 60-point games, I think he has 2 on the year. I think he has 4 or 5 50-point games. He's averaging 36 points per game. He's putting up numbers that we've only seen from Kobe and Jordan. He had that stretch of like 50-point games in a week basis. So he's been incredible. And you look on the other side, and Antetokounmpo, as you mentioned, Jorge, the Bucks have 60 wins. He's been able to take off fourth quarters. He's only playing 32 minutes per game, and he's still averaging 27, 12, and 5. If you put him to per 36 minutes, he's averaging 30, 14, and 6 with 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks. And Harden, keep in mind, plays 37 minutes. So then, you know, his numbers are a little bit more on par with Harden if he's playing the same amount of minutes as Harden, which we're going to see in 5-6 days anyways once the playoffs start. Antetokounmpo is not going to be playing 33 minutes. He'll be playing 36, 37 minutes.
Unless they're blowing him out.
Right, unless they're blowing him out, which they could in the first round, depending on matchups. Yeah. So for me, if I have a gun to my head, I'm picking Antetokounmpo.
Mm-hmm.
However, I felt this way during the Russell Westbrook, James Harden campaign, and I feel the same way this year. I almost feel like this is a year where there are co-MVPs. I just think it's one of the years when the Westbrook and Harden year, I know some people say, well, no, it should have been Harden. Westbrook doing triple-doubles like that for the first time we've ever seen, having 44, and the season he put on carrying that Thunder team was something we've never really seen before. Harden was fantastic. That, to me, was the first time I actually considered co-MVPs, because I thought both their campaigns and what they did individually, you couldn't discredit. And then this year, looking at what James Harden, as I just said, what James Harden has done and what Antetokounmpo has done, I think this is another case for co-MVPs. Or maybe trying to adapt the system where there's an Eastern Conference MVP and a Western Conference MVP. Either way, that's where I stand.
Yeah, well, you said it first, so I don't look as bad. I'm going with co-MVPs here. I think there's just – it's too hard.
Was that even an option? Why no was the guy
going It's first? A real thing.
It's a real thing.
Damn.
So I'll tell you some stats about James Harden that makes it almost impossible not to get him an MVP is, Corey mentioned, 260-point games, 750-point games. Oof. He has more 50-point games than he does sub-25-point games. Like, that's crazy. This is all via Dylan Pence's article on OTG, so shout out to him and check that out. But then the fact is he had a 32-game streak of scoring 30 points or more. Like, to not get James Harden an MVP in this season seems crazy. Obviously, Antetokounmpo has been dominant on both ends of the floor. And like I talked about, he literally could be in the contention for Defensive Player of the Year. So I think co-MVP is just a way to go right here because both guys have been so dominant in their own way.
Yeah, like, I mean,
teams have adjusted to defend James Harden in like the weirdest defense you'll ever see. They're playing behind him so he can't step back.
Yeah, and he's also... I think he's hit the most threes he's ever hit in a season as well, or he's taken the most threes. Like, he's still, like, his game is still evolving after an MVP season. Like you said, Nick, like, he's taken a step forward in his game, and I don't think a lot of people thought James Harden could get better. Obviously, the assist numbers have gone down because his usage rate had gone up, and he's got to be more of a scorer. But, like, you don't normally see guys in the prime of their career get this much better.
He's made 110 more threes than last season. Well, 98. He made 265 last year. This season, he's made 373.
Right.
I mean, absurd. Just looking at the numbers.
And, I feel like you're more than some teams.
And not to mention, we didn't even talk about this, James Harden has become a competent defender this year as well.
Right. You know, Very good in the post. Very good post defender. Yeah. I think in terms of advanced statistics, he's actually like top 10 in post defense.
Yeah.
Is able to create some turnovers as well. I think at one point in time, he was one of the best defenders in terms of pass deflections as well. So, you know, him elevating that side of the ball, I think also helps, you know, his case. And then for Antetokounmpo, I mean, you know, you can mention the 3-point percentage, but if he wasn't shooting them, we would all be on his ass like we are Ben Simmons. So the fact that Antetokounmpo has the guts to take at least two of those shots a game and still hit at least one of them, it feels like, it can only show to what his game is further evolving to become.
He's been a lot better in knocking down threes, I believe, in the second half of the season. To start the year, he was shooting like under 15%, I want to say. And he's hitting some timely threes. Obviously, a lot of the games haven't really mattered for the Bucks, I guess you could say. But still, that's why it's so hard because Antetokounmpo has been straight dominant. Like, teams don't know how to defend him. Like, he's just so big and strong. Then he's lanky as hell. So it's like, do we put a center on him? Does it work? He even said, like, teams have been throwing centers at me. That shit don't work.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with co-MVPs. I know a lot of people hate that take. It's kind of taking the easy road out. But I think in this situation, both guys really deserve the credit.
And we've seen co-MVPs in sports. I know Peyton – I want to say Peyton Manning won co-MVP.
You should know that. You're a Colts fan. Come on.
Yeah, I don't know who he won it with, but I think in 06 he won co-MVP.
Was it Steve McNair?
Don't say that. I hope not because that would be –
I think it was a really – I'm going to have to look it up right now.
Looking it up right now.
Yay. Yeah, I have no idea what NFL you're talking about.
Yeah, with Steve McNair, Corey.
Wow. It was with Peyton Manning, though, right?
Yeah. And it says rare tie, you know. So I think it'd be extremely rare. And we almost saw, like you said, with the Westbrook and Harden thing. But it would just be really hard for either guy not to win with the season they've had. Like, they both have different stretches of dominance where it's just like you have to give them the respect.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
All right, guys, any other awards you want to make up and talk about, or are you good running awards?
This is an award because actually, a little spoiler, I actually was going to pitch this idea for like an OTG series. So maybe we could just get the ball moving and have a little discussion. The most impressive player this season. And then what I mean by most impressive is like not like his stats are impressive, but like a guy who's impressed you the most this year.
Can we give it like a couple?
Yeah, of course. I think he's one of those.
Really been super impressive is Thomas Bryant on the Washington Wizards.
Like, low-key, yes.
Yeah, a lot of people don't watch him. He was actually on the Lakers, so they probably could have used him. But he's been really good for them. With Dwight Howard being out, I don't think he's like a long-term starter. But he surprised me.
Yeah, Thomas Bryant has surprised me. For me, like Buddy Hield has been a real big impressive play. I mean, the fact that he shot over 40% from three, like 46% from the field, and Sacramento really, I mean, obviously they took a nosedive after the All-Star break, but they were really in contention for most, for a playoffs, but most of the year because of De'Aaron Fox, who I thought was impressive, but Buddy Hield kind of becoming this clear-cut number two option for them.
Yeah, no, Buddy Hield is definitely impressed. Obviously, New Orleans, in hindsight, wishes they could probably go back on that trade, but, you know, they did get DeMarcus Cousins. They couldn't predict the injury. Excuse me. I think, you know, I'm going to talk about a low-key bench guy, and that's going to be Jared Dudley. Going to the season, I expected him to be, you know, okay, be that veteran present, maybe play a couple minutes with injury, but he's low-key been super impactful, not only off the court, but on the court, helping the Nets get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I just watched him last night when the Nets clinched against the Pacers. He really took that he's got that spark plug mentality, but he's just not a typical spark plug because normally spark plugs are like you know, energetic. Really energetic, but he's just like smart and knows what to do and knows kind of like how to get the guys around him into the game and more involved. So I think Jared Dudley is a solid pick.
I could say like pretty much most players on Orlando, because I didn't expect them to get into the playoffs. So the fact that they're in the playoffs and a lot of guys stepped up, Nikola Vucevic has taken a major jump in his game. DJ Augustine, probably a guy that doesn't get the love he deserves because he's been talking about needing a point guard for so long. He's done enough to kind of get them to a higher level. So that's been really impressive. I mean, the list can keep going on and on. Any other guys that pop automatically to your head?
I mean, for me, like I know we're not, it's, they're out of the playoffs and we know he's good, but I have been extremely impressed with Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah. Pat, after the Jimmy Butler trade has been awesome.
Yeah. He feels like almost like a 20 and 15 guy with ease, with the upside of being like a 30 and 20 guy. And I actually think he's an underrated passer, and I wouldn't be shocked if we started seeing Karl Anthony Towns with triple doubles in the future. Defensively is still a little bit lacking.
Room to improve, though.
Yeah, no, I think the one good thing about Karl Anthony Towns is this is a kid who's hungry to be good and wants to be better. I think just from like the nights I've seen with Minnesota, because like Wiggins obviously has regressed majorly this year, but Towns has been absolutely fantastic. And he's kind of, I've always been, I think you know this thing, I've kind of been like borderline of where he stands in my centers list. So when it comes to like top 10 and top five guys and such, I've always been kind of sour on him. But I seriously think in the next, you know, 5 years or so, we're going to be looking at him as like a solidified top three center. And I also still think in 2 years he'll be out of Minnesota, which will be good.
I might want to play with his buddy D'Lo.
My bad, guys. I had to go off for a sec. But are we talking all NBA teams?
Because No, not all NBA teams. Just players that have impressed you the most this year that have just been kind of surprises. Like most improved guys. Adrian in the YouTube chat brought up Julius Randle. I thought he's been impressive offensively, taking his game to another level. I think my biggest issue with Julius Randle is still the defense.
Yeah.
So I actually had prepared all NBA stuff and like, yeah. And I do want to point out something. If we're talking about guys improving, I don't know if it really counts, but talk about Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
It was, who was on the OTG staff that wrote an amazing article about Blake Griffin? It was Cam, right? I remember reading that article and being like, damn, Blake Griffin really deserves some major appreciation for what he has season. Like, and we talked about this with I remember talking about this with some of the guys on the staff. Like, it's crazy that when that contract first got signed, we all were like, damn, that's a terrible contract.
Puke.
And then he got traded to the Pistons. And it was like, how could anyone get, you know, not only get rid of that contract, but like actually get that contract, you know, and the Pistons, like, how would they do that move? And it turned out really well. I always questioned the fit between Drummond and Blake, but Blake has been a monster, you know, just from the simple fact that he stretched out his game to the 3-point line and turned it into a reliable weapon. It's made things so much easier for Drummond inside. And Blake, I mean, if we're talking about guys improving, I don't know if, you know, if it really counts considering he was previously was Rookie of the Year and a former actually. I'm pretty sure he was an MVP. Was he in third place a couple of years ago in MVP?
If you're trying to remember third place MVP finishes, that's rough for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Blake Griffin was third place in the MVP race a couple of years ago. So, you know, I didn't think he could get much better or even make it work in Detroit, but well, Major props to Blake Griffin.
Yeah, no, he has. He's transformed his game. When he came in the league, he was pretty much a dunker. He can only operate in the paint. You know, expanded a little bit of a post game. Now he can work on the perimeter, knock down threes, create offense for others, make his teammates better. You know, another guy who really bounced back and had a nice season was Danny Green in Toronto.
Oh, I love Danny Green.
I actually, when I was running the Twitter yesterday, I tweeted like a little stat thing. And I actually wasn't positive what his splits were for this season, and he's shooting career highs, you know, 46, 44, and I think 82 from the line. Like, those are really good numbers for Danny Green. And another guy who stuck out for me a little, I know his defense isn't great still, but Jahlil Okafor for the New Orleans Pelicans. Since Anthony Davis has been resting his load management, whatever they're doing. I know they're not playing because he's gone. But Okafor has looked really good on the offensive side of the ball, can rebound. Obviously, defensively, he's still kind of shaky. But I've been really impressed with him because before New Orleans and after his stint with Brooklyn last year, it wasn't sure that he was going to have another opportunity in the NBA. And he got one in New Orleans, and he's actually kind of, I think, solidified himself as maybe a piece for their future.
Yeah, he's been solid. I think the major key from him, he talked about mental health being a real issue for him and getting the help he needed. And obviously that's very important. But he also lost a ton of weight. Yeah. When the first time I saw him, they like start the season, he looked like a different player physically. And I think that's what he needed to do so he could be more active inside and be more of a role guy and be quicker. That slow body isn't going to work in the NBA nowadays. So I thought that was impressive. Jorge, you got anybody else you stuck out to you this year?
Yeah, quick shout out to – I don't know if counts too, but big shout out to Terrence Ross, because I remember he used to be a big guy off the bench back in the day, but then I think it's just his shooting splits became a little bit worse, and then he was not that big, but this year he's been big for the Magic off the bench, and it's one of the reasons why the Magic eventually became the best team in the Southeast Division. And as much as that hurts for me to say, it's true. And Terrence Ross has been, you know, he's one of those guys who can get hot in a, you know, make 2-3 shots and bam, boom, he's dropping 30 tonight. He's dropping 25. And that's the type of players of a team like the Magic needs. And he's been really good for them. Another guy that will command some attention when he becomes a free agent.
Yeah, and just a shout out. Oh, go ahead, Corey.
No, I was going to say, I really agree. I've loved Terrence Ross all year.
And just a shout out to a couple other guys that have really impressed this year. Tobias Harris becoming super efficient. Nikola Jokic being in the MVP conversation. Gallinari finally being healthy. John Collins being springy as hell. Lauri Markkanen looking great when he came back from injury. So, I mean, we could literally discuss guys that have impressed this season for another hour. But anybody else you want to shout out before we wrap it up?
Last guy I want to give a shout out to is Rudy Gay.
Oh, coming off a torn Achilles, which is extremely difficult. He looks fresh.
Yeah, coming off a torn Achilles, shooting a career high from the field, a career high from three. You don't normally see guys at 32 after having an Achilles injury have career highs like that. And he's playing 26 minutes a game, so it's not like he's playing no minutes or less minutes. And he's been crucial for San Antonio, who is also in the playoffs this year.
My last shout out, Bradley Beal. He's proven he can be the number one guy. Well, at least in the East Conference, right? And he's kept the efficiency at a pretty high level. So I really don't know the splits. If I'm
47, 35, and 80, and those are good.
Those are good considering he has no help, like Thomas Satoransky, Jeff Green, an injured Dwight Howard, and what else does he have?
Thomas Bryant.
Thomas Bryant.
Yeah, I mean they're not a great team. Bradley Beal is definitely impressed. He's, you know, picked up his game a little bit. I think the one thing is he didn't make the playoffs. Adrian brought up in the YouTube chat, Zach LaVine's been impressive scoring-wise.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be myself if I didn't shout out my guy, Caris LeVert, who impressed at the beginning of the season, and now he's finally getting back to that form after a terrible ankle injury. So, guys, always a pleasure. Check out our – Jorge, I know you want to get some in. I see your hands.
Justice better.
Yeah, Winslow developing into actual like playmaker and finding a role in the NBA I thought was huge for him. But that wraps it up. Check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube.